In Subjective Evolution of Consciousness, Srila Guru Maharaj is saying, the birth of our faith may be in intellectualism, but its goal is transcendental. The birth of our search and its destination will come to meet together. The birth of faith is from the potency of Krishna, and after moving through the whole of the infinite, it will come again to the potency where we will take our eternal position. So Maharaj, could you explain how the faith, which is transcendental by its nature, may take the birth in intellectualism?
Well, I think what Guru Maharaj means there is sometimes when it's being considered how to present Krishna consciousness, how to access Krishna conception, that things may be presented in a structured way, in an apparently rational way, to assist someone in understanding how it's possible to conceive along these lines. We'll notice when Mahaprabhu is instructing Sanatana Goswami, the Sanatana Shikshan section in Chaitanya Charitamritam, and he is explaining so many things in, we could say, a linear way. And that's what I mean by intellectually one thing being stated, then followed by another. It follows a particular intellectual course. But what's interesting, at a certain point, he starts just talking about what Prabhupada called the beauty and sweetness of Krishna. And this is not a rational presentation. And toward the end of the chapter, Mahaprabhu catches himself and says, oh, systematically explain Siddhanta to you, and then I got... He's apologizing, and then went on a tangent about the beauty and sweetness and charm of Krishna, just like Srila Guru Maharaj. Even in this very statement, it's proof of something to say. Wherever he started talking, he ended up speaking about Radha Dasyam. He also said that whenever Saraswati Thakur started his lecture, it concluded with Radha Dasyam and offering himself eternally to be the dust of the lotus feet of Rupa and Raghunath. So he's not telling us here really that intellectualism gives birth to faith. He's saying it's possible by hearing things presented systematically that will... assist you, or the word being used here, birth, give birth to. But if you see what he starts hinting at, and by inference explicitly referencing, he says it's a function of the potency of Krishna to reveal him, right? Didn't it say something like that? And it said, and as when you go to the deepest center of the infinite, you'll again... I forget the exact words, but be connected with the potency. What is the potency another name for? That means Srimati Radharani, Ladini Shakti. And elsewhere, Srila Guru Maharaj says that, faith is the halo of Radharani. It's a very interesting statement. And in the Govardhan Leela, Brahma Vimohan Leela, after the bewilderment of Brahma, which incidentally, in principle, was announced in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Muhyanti Yatsuraya, that even the gods are bewildered in trying to assess, estimate Krishna. Right? Leading Brahma to begin his prayer, when he says, the conclusion, Jnane Prayasam Udapasanamata Eva, he's saying, actually, give that up in trying to understand him. So Guru Maharaj is saying, may be helpful in the beginning. When I said to him, well, another verse comes to mind where it says, Sakala, Sakala Charya Bhai, Shraddha Devi or Gunagai, give up everything, my dear brothers, and just Shraddha Devi, take shelter of her, sing the glories of Shraddha Devi. So Guru Maharaj is always emphasizing Jnana Shunya Bhakti, right? Knowledge free devotion. And saying when he heard this from Saraswati Thakur always hammering this, it was a shock to Guru Maharaj. As a Bhattacharya Brahman, with great force, intensity, Saraswati Thakur dismissing. But who is dismissing? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, arguably the greatest philosopher of the last, 200 years now, or whatever it's been. And who said of Srila Guru Maharaj, in one instance, there was some intricate thing in the Gaudiya Math, and Guru Maharaj revealed what it was, and Saraswati Thakur said, Sridhara Sakala Veti. Sridhara, he knows everything. So I said to Guru Maharaj, you're always saying, talking about, our target is Jnana Shunya Bhakti. I said, but you know so much. And for a moment, Guru Maharaj went like he was caught, I said, so the person who's saying this, Sridhara Sakalam Veti, he knows everything, and he's saying, well, you can take that in one of two ways. The way to take it is that if such a person is telling you this is the goal, it's underscoring it even more, but the aspect of it that's a little perplexing is, but you know not only so much, but everything, how to... And Guru Maharaj thought for a minute, and he said, when jnan comes to serve devotion, then it's in its rightful position. So in this case, we could say, can intellectualism be used in the service of devotion? Yes. But the goal is jnana shunya bhakti. Like we see when they're Braja Gopis, and again, Guru Maharaj's words, half civilized, stupid jungle girls. Those are the words he uses. But he means like silly, like sometimes the teenage girls are portrayed as silly. Saying that's their posing. They're gopis. They're not Brahmins. They're not Kshatriya princesses. They're gopis. So they're actually from the lower section of society in Varnasram, right? If you say that's the halfway point, then they're in the lower part. Half civilized, jungle girls is their posing. Then we see one of them, whom Srila Jiva Goswami in Mahaprabhu's Leela, has his Manjari position and as a gopi in Krishna Leela, but in Gaura Leela, an unparalleled philosopher. So when, like the Bilva Mangal sloka, mukti mukulitanjali sevatesman dharmartha kama gataya samaya pratiksha, they're waited with folding hands to serve the devotee. So in that way we can understand it. But that Brahma, who's Gyane Priyasimunapasa Namateva slok can send us in the direction of Gyanashunya Bhakti. He says, in the first sloka of the Brahma Stuti, after the bewilderment, when he has now come to his senses, so to speak, and wants to offer praise to Krishna, who he misjudged, he's saying, I know Narayan, forearm Narayan, I'm Atmabhu. He is born from the lotus navel of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He's saying, I understand how Narayan is Bhagavan, but that a five-year-old boy with food in his left hand and a flute, a stick in his belt and a flute on the other side, that he's Swayam Bhagavan. Forgive me for not knowing that. It just didn't seem rational. So in his prayers, he begins with Nomijite Abra Vapuse Taridambaraya Gunjava Tanksha Paripichila Sangmukaya. That means he's Gunjamala wearing and peacock feather. Lakshma Sriye Mridupade Pashupana Salasline. Kavalavetra Vishana Venu. Kavalavetra Vishana Venu. In his hand he's holding a food and Mridupade Pashupankajaya, and how he walks in these short, beautiful steps. We know as Vaman Avatar, he can cover the universe in two steps, but Krishna has a particularly charming walk when he's young, especially. And there, he's saying, Abravapu means he's comparing his form and the complexion of his form to a cloud. And we're told in some places, like the Ganasham, the blackish cloud. So he's very hard to see. It's very beautiful what he's saying, because it's like literal and metaphorical. He's saying he's very hard to see, right? Because of this complexion. Nomijite Abra Vapuse. But what then? Taridambaraya. Ambaraya means how he's dressed. Tadit means lightning. But he's wearing this lightning dress, like lightning meaning this flashing golden yellow color. And that makes, because of that, we can see him. So Srila Guru Maharaj, this is Guru Maharaj's, what he extracts from this verse. He's saying, so what does that mean? That's the potency. Krishna on his own, difficult to see, to estimate, to assess, everything. But when dressed in his lightning dress, when he's dressed in his potency, that contrast reveals his form. So it's the potency of Krishna that reveals Krishna. And the potency of Krishna in its highest representation means Srimati Radharani. And so when Guru Maharaj says, faith is the halo of Radharani, then now we're in a better position to understand what he means by that. So, just as in his Gayatri explanation, Bargo Bhai Vishabhanu Jatma Bivavai Ka Radhana Sri Puram, one line. Bargo means that effulgence or illumination. Bargo Bhai Vishabhanu Jatma Bivavai. Vrishabhanu, who came from Vrishabhanu Maharaj, means again, Radharani. So this is also very beautiful, Guru Maharaj saying, because ostensibly, Savitur means the sun. So we think, oh, it's the sun that illumines everything. And this is how he connects this to subjective evolution. It's the sun that reveals everything. Oh, and that's referenced here in this mantra. But then Guru Maharaj is saying, is it really the sun that reveals everything? No. Because how do we see by the light of the sun? Is Atma. So it's Atma that reveals everything. And Atma means, has two divisions. Paramatma, Jivatma, under the heading of Atma. So it's Paramatma and the Angsa, Jivatma, that reveals everything. Because without Atma, you don't see, whether there's a sun or not, nothing is seen. So it's Atma that's revealing everything. That's in the objective world. But in the subjective world, which is sometimes, in this case, we would say the Paramatma world. Saying, but in that world, what is the nature of that world? We're riveted to objective graphics and visuals. So we think, oh, there's light illuminating things, so then the is illuminating that world. But Guru Maharaj, to help us understand this more precisely, saying, what is that, the nature of that world? It's not only consciousness. It's a given that consciousness is what illumines everything. But that would be passive or non-participatory. That world is also described as Shraddha Mayoyam Loka and Seva Mayoyam Loka. So if that world is constructed of Seva, which again means consciousness enriched with dedicating tendency. So that world is comprised of Seva, then this can be rephrased as, who's revealing that world? Who's revealing the world of Seva is who's revealing Seva. All Seva is transacted through Srimati Radharani to Krishna. So then it would stand to reason that she reveals Krishna conception. And there may be the beginning awakening of that prospect, but Guru Maharaj is saying, if you follow it, just like in those words, prachodaya, like if you're there, it's a, he uses the word suggestion, which I think is very sweet and beautiful. He doesn't say Radharani's order, sometimes, but in one instance he said, Radharani's suggestion, we should follow her suggestion. Which almost sounds like it's optional. But he said, we should follow her. So this suggestion, little pushing, pulling in a particular direction, the antaranga shakti, in-carrying current, go with that particular flow that's going to the central conception of the infinite, then you will see her, but in all her, in her full position, that she is the origin and the source of all seva, service, shraddha, everything. And Prapana Jivanamritam, Srila Guru Maharaj in the introductory slokas, it's Guru Rupa Harim Gauram Radha Ruchi Ruchavritam Nityam Nomi Navadipe Namakirtana Nartanai. The Guru Rupa of Hari is Gauranga. What are you saying? In other words, when Krishna takes the form of Guru, he's Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Who is Gauranga Mahaprabhu? Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalita. Krishna enveloped in the heart and halo of Radharani. So it's saying, when Krishna is guru in earnest, like Radharani, her position, then he can reveal fully what is Krishna consciousness. That's why, I mean, and once I'm just teasing a little bit, like, in comparison with Bhagavad Gita on the surface, seems more general or less specific. That's why Guru Maharaj's book is called Hidden Treasure of the Sweet Absolute, because it's there, but not ostensibly by conventional reading of the slokas. But on a deep level examination, this sort of thing will come out. Like under the influence of Srila Guru Maharaj's Susiddhanta is reading Bhagavad Gita, once the sloka, Mahatmanas tumam partha devim prakritim asrata bhajan tvananya manaso gyatpa bhuta demabhyam. So I thought, this is when I realized Guru Maharaj, how much he is, his throwing potency. I thought, who are the Mahatmas? That's a general term. Who would be the greatest? Well, that would be the Braja Gopis, right? Who would be the greatest? They are. And what are they? Mahatmanas tumam partha, daivim prakritim asridha. And they're completely sheltered. And here, devi prakriti means Radharani. And what? Bhajan tvananya manaso. Bhajan tvananya, Guru Maharaj said, really, 24 hours seva is only possible in its extreme sense in Madhura Rasa. He said, because, in a sweet way, again, he said that, you know, while everyone else is sleeping, then Krishna's rendezvous with Braja Gopis in the dead of night. In that way, you know, I know there are many other possibilities that can be interpreted from there. But this is what he said. So, Chaitanya Charitamritam, Krishna mantra hoite have sangsara mochan. From Krishna mantra, sangsara mochan, liberation from negative influence. But Krishna nama habe hoite Krishna racharan. So, but by, through Krishna nam takes you to the lotus feet of Krishna. And then Guru said, what does that mean, the lotus feet? That means service of the lotus feet of Krishna and is being transacted by and through whom? Again, means Radharani. So Bhargobai, Vrishabhanu, Jatma, Bivabai, Karadana, Aradana, Sri Puram. And like she is a Sri Pura, like a beautiful city, illumined city of seva, right? Like Gurudev, there was a song he knew from his childhood that we know some, Guru Maharaj is so attached to Srila Govinda Maharaj that sometimes if he had to go to Calcutta, there was a bridge, Guru Anga Sethu, he has to go over. So he'd go in the car this way, and then Guru Maharaj would send Haricharan Prabhu on the shortcut path. And then right when the car there, Haricharan Prabhu were there and said, Guru Maharaj wants you to come back. And then he'd have to drive back. And, you know. So he said, if I need to put Guru Maharaj in a good mood, then I will sing Tungamani Mandire, the song that goes like that. And that would inevitably put Guru Maharaj in a super happy, ecstatic mood to hear that song. Then Govinda Maharaj could slip out and go do something. But, and I heard him say that many times over the years, but in the last year, And the last time, actually, when he was in Navadvip, I said, Maharaj, what does that mean, actually, Tungamani Mandira? And he said, oh, it means, like, in Barshana on the hill, that Radharani, that her heart is like a lighthouse of Krishna Prem, illuminating everything. Right? So when we, in these contexts, when we use words like illumination, we don't mean light as it's conceived. Even we conceive of consciousness as illuminating. But what about the illuminate, the Krishna Premic illumination from her heart? He said, like a lighthouse of Krishna Prem on a hill. So, if we look at the works of Rupa Goswami and something Raghunath Das Goswami, that there are different books, but I mean they're more on rasa tattva, you could say. There's no, ostensibly, again, there's no philosophy there. They're not trying to convince you of anything. They're just the expressions of Radha and Krishna and Braja Gopis and their pastimes. And the kind of, but the layers of meaning and what they express is astonishing and inconceivably wonderful. And sometimes they make references to Puranic sayings, but usually with some humor or cleverness. That's why Srila Jiva Goswami, Prabhu Seva, his Seva is to show the Shastric basis, reference, that if anyone would question the legitimacy of what is given by Rupa Goswami and the others, but particularly there, to show, he's going to show you all Puranic, Upanishadic, Vedic references that establish the legitimacy of these things. But Rupa Goswami, he's not writing like that. Telling these divine pastimes, and some a rational thing, or think, well, how does he know these things? Is he making up these stories, or is he writing reality? Are they things that happened, and he's writing about them, or are they happening as he's writing them, or all of the above? But as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, netihasa nikalpanam, the pastimes of Krishna are not a historical occurrence, but neither are they imaginary. And that's why we say they're, in Prapanchalila, prakat, they're manifest in this world for some time. But enter the aprakat, as soon as we hear the word unmanifest, all our minds are deluged with, like, impersonalism. But that's not what it's saying. It's just saying not visible here. It's still visible, but not the way it was here for some time. That's all. It's withdrawn its prapancha visibility. It's still, it's going on eternally. So, and serving or assisting someone in the gradual development of faith, there may be a particular systematic approach to give exposure. So, for so often, and rightfully so, the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita Atmagyan, all about the soul and being embodied and transmigration and such. There, that's the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That's where the spiritual instructions begin. That's how Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. And you can see it's rational up to a point. Right? Vasamsi jirnani yatabhiha, as our clothes become old and tattered, we change them and put on new clothes, so the soul changes bodies. They're actually very simple examples. Upon hearing them, you get the idea. It doesn't mean that necessarily someone believes that, but you hear this, it becomes clear what he's saying. It's not like, well, what does he mean by that? No, they're very simple examples. And I find this to be profound in this sense that, like, the devotee saying, what's the first thing you should say to someone? That comes up from time to time. Someone who has not been exposed to Krishna consciousness, apparently. Where should you start? Or what would be good examples? And then I thought, Krishna is in the heart of every living being. Like, now, before, and in the future. Like, so he must, and he's also omniscient, without trying. I mean, it's just, so he must, know what a good example is, right? I mean, you would think this would be a good example. So I assume these examples he's giving in the Bhagavad Gita, he's vetted, that they would be good examples for people to hear. Because he's using them himself. I've got one. Maybe you do. But the ones that he uses are, I assume, they're really good. Tried, tested, have a high, success outcome or whatever they call it. Komaram yovanam jara, embryonic body to baby body to child, teenager, youth, adult. But then he'll say, that's all rational up to a point, because that's within our experience. You can't objectively deny that. Right? Other things could, but this cannot be up to that point. So he's giving you an example of something that's within your experience. Because we remember being children, or we see the pictures, the embarrassing pictures. That's what I feel sympathy for modern children who are being photographed and videoed from practically when they come out of the womb in some instances. So the amount of embarrassing pictures parents have of them great magnet. Whereas, and before that, there's always been embarrassing pictures since the invention of the camera. What's interesting about this example is, I'm saying, up to this point, we didn't get to the last part of the sloka yet. He's giving you an example of something that's within your experience, that you've been constant. That doesn't mean that you didn't evolve. That's not what I mean. But you've had a constant identity throughout this change of bodies. That anyone can acknowledge. A most rational person could agree with that. But then he says, tata dehantara prapti dhiras tatra namuhyati. But tata dehantara prapti... that after giving up this body or death, he's saying, you'll acquire another body. Now that's where it requires some faith. So we see some intellectual, systematic representation up to this point to get you the point. And then he's going to say something that actually requires some faith. But maybe you got some faith hearing the rational explanation up to that point. And then, tata dehantara prapti dhiras tatra namuyati. And at the time of death, you'll take another body. And those who are dhīra, they're not bewildered by this. This isn't confusing to them. They can make this leap of faith and understand it. So there are examples, you know, Shaka Chandrika Nyai. Nyai being, you know, Vedic logic. And one type is called Shaka Chandrika Nyai, means like we had this moon, lunar eclipse, and sometimes it's hard to see around here, but you could go out in front and say, you see that tree over there? Yes. Follow up the trunk of the tree, see the branch, or go out to the right. See at the end of the branch? There's the moon. Oh, that's what it's saying. That's Shaka Chandrika Nyai. What is, you can't see, you're given something immediate to follow that leads you to, oh, and then you can locate it. So the tree is not proof. Right? It's not a proof. It's just something that helps you, access what is to be understood, the substantial thing. It's helpful. It's actually, the tree has nothing to do with the moon. I just want to make another point in another direction. You understand? The tree itself has nothing to do with the moon. But from where we are, if I point to that tree and say, at the end of the branch on the right, there's the moon, it helps you locate that thing. So it's useful in that way. But it, in and of itself, is not the substantial thing. So when Krishna is giving these examples, it's systematic presentation, something within your experience, so that can, you could say, help you conceive. There's a little, blossoming or burgeoning faith. And then he suggests something that requires faith to accept. But maybe you'll be more inclined to accept it at that point because you heard a somewhat rational presentation up to that point. It's something like that. But the world that we seek, you know, to serve the exalted servants and servants of that world is not rational. There's an Upanishadic sloka that Srila Prabhupada liked to quote where it says, you know, there's a sun there, there's a moon there, but he would say, there's no need for sun, there's no need for moon, but there's a sun and a moon. So there's like day and night. Right? Lilanukul. It's favorable to the promotion of lila and pastimes. That's why everything is there. Not for some empiric necessity. Rational. But that said, so there's that approach. And that's the one, that's sort of our default position, is to start with something that is systematic and rational sounding to appeal to the intellect. But once I was being interviewed by a journalist, and they were asking questions about something that I was not happy to talk about, but it just happened. So, and that reporter could perceive I was uncomfortable or not excited about that. It wasn't like a preaching opportunity so much. But while we were speaking, then Mahayogi Maharaj knocked on the door and he said, there's some professors visiting from the University of Minnesota and I want to show them a tape of Guru Maharaj. What do you recommend? I was familiar with these tapes, the videos. I knew, like, oh, this one, number 5, or whatever. Said, what's on there? I said, you know, it's what Guru Maharaj is explaining, you know, na prema gandasti, dharapi. If I had a drop of love for Krishna, I would have died long ago. And he said, oh yeah, yeah, that's a great lecture. Thanks. And he shut the door and went down. You know. And then I looked at that lady again. I'm like, oh boy. Yeah. And she said, can I ask you a question? And I was like, yes, ma'am. You know, go ahead. And she said, why did that person say, if I had a drop of love for Krishna, I would have died long ago? That piqued her interest. That captured her. Like, there was something about that that caught her. So you could say, just for the sake of, you know, this discussion, that that might not be your starting point. But for her, that was interesting. She wanted to hear the answer to that question. And then I began to preach to her about Mahaprabhu, you know, as best I could in that circumstance. But she found that as something she could appreciate. So we may, our default position may be systematic, rational representation. But it's not always like that. So Mahaprabhu, he's talking to Sanatana Goswami, and then he goes on this tangent about the beauty and sweetness of Krishna. He can't not do that. And then he's apologizing in the end, like, that's not what I wanted to say. But it's, of course, what should have been said. Srila Saraswati Thakur, there's a conversation he had with a professor, apparently from Ohio State University, and who asked some question, and Saraswati Thakur, in his answer, starts telling the pastime of Mother Yashoda looking into the mouth of Krishna to see if he's eaten earth. And from what we can see there, Saraswati Thakur is in some sort of an ecstatic state in telling this pastime. And it came to him in his divine inspiration. And that person says to him something along these lines, like, well, you don't have to get emotional about it. Could you say something philosophical? And Saraswati Thakur says, actually, that was not sentimentality, but he lets it go and then continues with the philosophical, because he understands that's what this person wants to hear. But some divine inspiration came to him to express this pastime. So, when we're in Lakta in St. Petersburg, on Janmashtami every year, like the Indian ambassador comes, like around August 15th, it coincides with Janmashtami often, somewhere around that time. And 1 year, the Indian ambassador was a lady, right? And I think they serve for 2 years and they rotate. And so we're talking to her, and because we always meet them and try and have a little Krishna katha or something. And I came to understand that her name was Radhika. And I said, oh, such a beautiful name. And maybe I asked how that came about, but she said when she was a little girl, well, first of all, we should say in India, sometimes children, they start life with a nickname and after a while get a full name. It's like, this is before like the legal document thing. It was just, they'd have some sort of nickname, and then in time they would be given a full name. So she said when she was a little girl, she had some pet name, but her grandma, you know, Babushka, had these little Radha Krishna deities. And she would worship them every day and, like, you know, clean them, the altar, and put new clothes on and offer flowers. And the little girl would sit next to her grandmother while she's doing this. And she said, and her grandmother's always talking about Radhika and Krishna, Radhika and Krishna. And then Radhika did this and Krishna did that. And she would tell the pastimes of sweet pastimes. A little girl sitting next to her watching grandma do these things. But this impressed her so much, she said to her, can my name be Radhika? And the grandma said, yes. So she got that name. So this was a child, and this is the beauty of Krishna Lila, that and just for the record, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Chaitanya Shikshamritam advises, he's saying, the childhood, because we say Krishna Lila, Radhika, you know, he said, the childhood pastimes of Krishna are safe for the beginners, new recruits, etc. They're safe. He said, and the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, this can be, this is all right. So, why did I say that? So you can't speak philosophy to a child. I remember Muraleeswar told him once that his son, when he was like 4 or something, said to him, why do people die? You know, it's just difficult to explain. But these pastimes, Krishna stealing butter, feeding it to the monkeys, and a child can hear that and be delighted. Even an adult can hear it. My sister-in-law, who was being told by people to diet or this, that, or the other thing, when I told her that Krishna loves butter, she said, I like that. That's my kind of God. I said, so you have something in common. You both like butter. That's a start. So, again, default position, rational, systematic representation. But not always. Sometimes some inspiration comes or the circumstances inspire another type of talk. We should be open to that. Because after all, it's Krishna revealing himself. And Krishna revealing himself through his potency. His potency likes to inspire Krishna Katha of varieties of Krishna Katha, we should say. So when we hear the avatars on their appearance day, the charm of Vaman avatar, the Nisringa pastimes, Kurma, the Kurma, Mohini Murti, and Kurma, I wondered sometimes why, but, and you may know something about that yourself, but Southeast Asia, this is like the pastime. It's at the Suvarnabhumi Airport in Bangkok, it's all over Cambodia, they all know this. Angkor Wat, what's on the walls, this pastime. And lest we think that that's something peripheral, Srila Guru Maharaj has revealed, actually it's at the heart of the matter is Madhura Rasa, which is the target of Bhagavatam. Because I asked him, and see how these, here's an example of how it comes too. One of our Indian members in San Jose, He was always coming to the temple, he and his wife and family and devotees were always saying, if you're ever in India, please go to the mat. But they're like from South India. So we never really expected this to happen. But then lo and behold, like I was there with Guru, he showed up. Like, you know, they're very sincere people. I mean, it was, you're saying, deep South India and from... Well, this will explain the story, where he came from. Because he's being introduced to Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj says, oh, and where have you come from? And it was, I believe, like Kurmukstanam or something. There's a, what do they call it? The station that's in the mountain? It has a name. It ends in station, a something station. I can't, someone from India. We need someone from India. Hill station. Anyway, so he says Kurma. And they have a polite conversation. Guru Maharaj is very polite. Like Prabhupada said, a Vaishnava is a perfect gentleman. And then it's just sort of, that's it. That's the man. He's just happy to be bathed in the glance of the Supreme Vaishnava. But I had just read the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, the last chapter, which is only something like 22, 24 verses. So you think, after 18,000, the summary, they have to be meaningful, right? Like the last one, Babaji Maharaj liked very much, because it goes, Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashanam Pranamo dukkha samanas tannamami harim param. That's the last sloka of the Bhagavatam, singing the glories of Nam Sankirtan. So of course, it's favorite to Babaji Maharaj. But earlier, maybe, you know, half a dozen verses in, there's this reference to the Kurma avatar. And we know that in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, Mohini Murti, the Devas and the Asuras churning the Kheer Sagar, the moon is produced, Lakshmi Devi, Aravata, Indra's, different things. Are they random generations, or is there something there thematically? So, ostensibly, they're seeking Amrita, which, you know, like in the language of movie trailers, you know, and you know what started out, you know, they're seeking immortality. Come, watch the Devas and the Asuras turn the mandra. You know. And that, in its most general sense, we think, oh, that's the pastime. But then they're unable, then Kurmadeva appears, they put the Mandara Hill, Vasuki and start, you know. But I was thinking, like, why is this being mentioned? I mean, it's a wonderful pastime, but this is the end of the Bhagavatam. These last slokas must be, like, crucial to understanding the whole work. I didn't get it, you know. And so I was asking Guru Maharaj, why is this sloka there? It begins, Prishte Brahmyada Manda Mandara Giri Grabhagya Kandu Yana Nidralo Kamatakritir, etc. So I said, I don't understand. And this was in the late after, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, which generally was not a time to go into deep philosophical discussions with Guru Maharaj. There's like reading of the mail, people visiting, news. And when I asked Guru Maharaj, he stopped. And I looked at Sagar Maharaj and like, oh, I'm taxing Guru Maharaj's brain. But I was just, it just seemed like a segue. He came from that town, Kurma, you know. And then I was going to say to Guru Maharaj, it's okay, we can take this up another time. But what he was doing was what he does, where he says, like a computer, he scans all the scriptures. He scans all the statements of the great acharyas and their commentary. He's scanning the statements of Saraswati. He's scanning all of... In other words, this was not something he had answered many times, and he's now going to give the rote recitation of the answer to this. So on right then and there, in front of it, he is extracting fresh substance. Like Guru Maharaj said of Saraswati Thakur, what I liked about my Guru Maharaj? He said, he was not vomiting what he heard from others, but giving something fresh. So I was just about to say, Maharaj, you know, like, and he said, what was the object of their search? And we'll say, well, Amrita, right? Like we hear the Kumbh Mela after Mohini Murti, she's got the pot of nectar and a drop went here, a couple drops there. And we think, oh, the devas and the asuras, they want to get Amrita, which means immortality, because Mrityu means death. Amrita means the nectar of immortality too, or you won't have to die. And it's interesting, so I see, the devas and the asuras, they're both trying for this. Like, you know, we know the asuras, they want to live forever in this world, right? Because they don't accept that there's any other world. So, and this life is all in all, so you can understand, it makes sense. The head of Google, someone said, so do you think you can find a cure for cancer? He said, possibly. He said, but if we did, that would... extend the life of cancer victim on an average 5 to 7 years, according to calculations. He said, but what if we could find a cure for death? He said, actually, that is our program. Interesting. So the devas, they're maybe 10,000 years in the heavenly planets, but they also, there's an expiration date on their stay there. They exhaust their pious activities, have to come down again. They want. But really, and Guru Maharaj is saying, but what is nectar? What is the Bhagavatam about? Achieving immortality? I don't know the characters, but in the Greek myth, someone asks for immortality, is gifted immortality, but forgot to ask to be young. And in the Bhagavatam, who is it? Chayavana Rishi, like Chavanprash. You know, anyway, that kind of thing. Who wants to like extend their longevity in the objective world. The Bhagavatam is not about that. And it's not about generic immortality either. So what is its conception of Amrita? He's saying, why this verse is given there, it's saying the ultimate nectar is Madhura Rasa, and that's the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. The moon comes out of the Kheer Sagar. What is that? Chandravamsa. That's where Krishna appears. Lakshmi Devi, Sri, the goddess of fortune. So you can understand, does that imply there's going to be some pastimes between Chandra representation and Lakshmi representation? You know, yes. That's the subject matter of this book. Freud tells us that Eros is the driving principle of material existence. We say, on the basis of what's in Bhagavad Gita, this world is a perverted reflection of the original. Then we can understand it's a driving principle in the spiritual world, but not in an objective eros, but subjective eros. That's Madhura Rasa. And without knowing about that, people will only conclude the only possible plane of expression of this tendency is here. No possibility there. So, and with that as your options, who's going to opt for liberation? Except people who are, you know, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, their senses don't work anymore. Right? They're churning that ocean. Right? Trying to extend. And I don't want to say anything untoward, but what is the gift of modern science? You can just figure that out yourself. So that's their conclusion. This is the only world where there's any sort of erotic expression. Because what do people, you know, heaven is a place where nothing ever happens. Really? I don't think so. Or, you know, it's just people sitting in a lotus position, smiling. Brajagopis are in anxiety. Vaikuntha may be without anxiety, but not Goloka. Goloka is filled with anxiety. But it's made out of sugar. It's sweet. Like sometimes they make a little house or something out of candy. They make a little thing. It's all candy. It's sweet. So sweet anxiety. Heart devouring sweet anxiety that you can't give up. It's another type of plane. So Guru is saying, what is their object? They want to achieve the ultimate nectarine substance. What is it? It's Madhura Rasa, and that's the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's why this sloka appears in the final chapter. And then when you realize that, then you say, oh, so that's how we are to understand that pastime. Which is so wonderful. And I remember thinking along these lines in the museum in Phnom Penh. I mean, you've been to Angkor Wat itself, but in Phnom Penh, they have a section that was taken from the temple, but it's Lakshmi coming out of the ocean and being... It's so beautiful. And then I recalled these things. So this transcends intellectualism and rational thought. And that's where we like to be. Aspire to serve that plane under the guidance of the agents of that world and their servants. Gopi Bhartur Parakamalayo Dasa Dasa Anudasa. Hare Krishna. Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Oh, I want to say one thing. Is that because tomorrow's the disappearance day of Sri Bhakti Premik Siddhanti Maharaj. We're talking about Prem and him. And who was Chidananda Prabhu for so many years, but Sri Bhakti Premik Siddhanti Maharaj. And I just want to say that people, when they talk about how they met Prabhupada, or they'll tell different stories about what was going on in their life or how they initially approached him or whatever. But he told me, and this is in San Francisco in like 1967 or something, he meets Prabhupada and he says to me, he said, he looked like he could use some help. And I thought, how pure. He meets Prabhupada and says, he looks like he could use some help. And what does he do? He immediately starts helping him. You know, he goes, I have a car, so if you need to go anywhere, I'm available. And Prabhupada needs to go places. So he becomes like his chauffeur, driver, taking him to Stowe Lake and Golden Gate Park for walks, shopping. He immediately, He starts by serving Prabhupada as a personal assistant. This is before, you know, Nam, Mala, anything. He's just helping Prabhupada. And I heard the day I joined that Prabhupada said he was a pure devotee. Because we were all like, whoa, who is this Chidananda? We'd like to meet. Prabhupada said he's a pure devotee. And when I started preaching about Guru Maharaj, like maybe first a little clandestine and then going towards fully open, he was the first person to contact. I had at that time around 20 tapes. So I went in the Bhaktivedanta tape ministry. They had a high-speed duplicating machine, made 20 tapes, sent them to him in Santa Cruz. And when we began the Mott in San Jose, he's the first, you know, just like got the phone like turned on. I'm like, ding, the phone. I picked it up. It's Siddhanti Chidananda Prabhu in Santa Cruz. He wanted to know how to go to the Mott. So, but really, his fully blossomed devotional position came out in the service and association of Srila Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj. That's where he just gave himself wholeheartedly to the service of the lotus feet of Srila Gurudev. So much so, in Bangkok, the last time Gurudev was there, a few months before his leaving the world, I had the good fortune to take lunch with him, and Gurudev told me, because he wanted some news about Siddhanti Maharaj, and I had an email or something, and he said, Maharaj, I cannot understand his devotion. Even in this condition, like dying condition, he's serving me. What is it? Like, he was astonished. And this is an exact quote. He said, if my disciples will take the dust from his lotus feet, they will get guru bhakti. If they will take the dust from his lotus feet and put it on their heads, they will get devotion to guru. And speaking of Lakta, why did I say Lakta before? There was a reason. Yes. I don't think I ever...
Janmashtami, celebrating Janmashtami there. And,
About Indian, the lady ambassador. From embassy. Okay. Well, anyway, we're back in Lakta now. And it's not Janmashtami. And it's after midnight. But there's this roaring kirtan going on outside. And I was like, what's going on out there? And there's a skyline. I look outside and I see there's all these young Russian boys and girls, and some from the Ukraine also. And they're all like singing, dancing, and jumping. But in the center is Siddhanti Maharaj with the kartals. And he's towering and leaping, like what's called Udanda Nritya, that type of leaping straight up and back down. He's leaping up in the air and coming back down again and leaping. And he's leading this kirtan, Haribo, Haribo. And there's this, you know, sea of young Russian boys and girls dancing around him. And it's just extraordinary. So when I read the Bhagavatam Sloka, Narada's conclusion where he said, Etat sarvam guru bhaktyo purusho hyanjaso jayet. He said, so many things can be said, recommended, this, that. Some of them seem almost unattainable. And he says, but in conclusion, in summary, if you have devotion, if you have guru bhakti, you get everything. You conquer everything, you get everything. So that is the goal that he achieved. And not that I'm just saying that, Gurudev himself said that of him. So tomorrow's his disappearance day. And I thought he disappeared a few months before Srila Gurudev because he wouldn't be able to tolerate that. That he wouldn't be able to go on. So it was Krishna's mercy that he took him a couple months before. Yes. Yes. Yes, there you go. Right. To receive him. So Jai Srila Bhakti Prema Siddhanti Maharaj Ki Jai.